98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bigley Blast.
Torey Lovello is the strangest lame duck manager in the history of Major League Baseball, and that's because all of his bosses seem to love him. First, it was Mike Hazen and Derek Hall, and on Monday, it was Ken Kendrick, who predicted that Lovello would once again be managing the Diamondbacks next season. There's one problem with that. What happens if the Diamondbacks are 20 games under 500 after a month and a half? What if they lose 100 games? Who's going to hear about it? Where will all the fan anger be directed? Now, Kendrick compared Lovello's situation to a player in the final year of his contract, but that analogy doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me because Lovello isn't going to start trying harder or start sleeping at the office, and to the contrary, the pressure to perform for his next contract could have hazardous effects, putting unneeded pressure into each big managerial decision. It just seems so unnecessary if they really like Lovello because, like it or not, they are setting him up to fail with a baseball team that cannot possibly compete. And anyone with any experience knows how hot seats in these stories take on a life of their own because you cannot control public opinion from last place. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler at Chapman BMW on Camelback. Shop online at chapmanbmw.com.
All right, before we get head first back into the Torey Lovello topic, there was some reaction to today's edition of Mustache, Not a Mustache.
Was it, really?
There was.
Wow.
On social media.
Okay.
From Jesus, who basically echoed your sentiments and said, quite simply, that question sucked. Colin Gillette, look, that's a really crummy tiebreaker to end Mustache, Not a Mustache, but in all fairness, anyone that can pull out the singer's name from CNC Music Factory probably deserves to win anyway.
Yeah, you know what? I agree with Colin. you being able to pull that name out, that's good enough for me.
That's pathetic.
Yeah, it's good enough for me.
And I made a mistake on Fred Gwynn's character. He was not Judge Trotter.
Oh.
Trotter was the prosecuting attorney. He was Judge Chamberlain Halla. So thank you to Eric for calling me out on that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Today is also the anniversary.
My day is ruined. Yeah. I messed up a My Cousin Vinny fact. I was having such a good
day. Okay. It's okay. Today is also the anniversary because today in 1994 is when Jim Everett and Jim Rome got into it.
Bet you don't call me Chris ever again.
I bet I do. Chris.
That's excellent.
I was telling you off the air. So many people in the audience may not remember this, but when ESPN2 started, they tried to make it all edgy, like an ESPN with an edge. And it was the middle of the 90s. It wasn't a really good time to try edgy because nobody was really pulling it off. Like, remember Keith Olbermann used to wear a leather, like a multicolored leather jacket to do the sports highlights? They tried. Yeah. So they put Jim Rome on, who was this edgy radio host. He wasn't on in this market at the time. So that video was my first exposure to Jim Rome.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was like his big, outside of Los Angeles, his big, you know, hey, look at me moment.
Yeah.
And
that's exactly what it
credit
was.
To him. He's had a wonderful career, but that was the first time I ever heard or saw Jim Rome.
Mike Wise, former columnist at the Washington Post, he brought up something very interesting. He said that incident with Jim Everett and Jim Rome basically ushered in the provocateur age of sports media, of confrontational, especially on television, the debate shows, that kind of stuff. Some people might tell you that's not the greatest development, but that probably is true.
Yeah.
Mike Wise also wrote this quote, when I regularly did ESPN's Rome is Burning television show, the Jim Rome show crew secretly watched the Jim Everett video religiously, reveling in Rome's shock and fear. That's how much they like their boss.
Jim, good to have you on the show.
Good to be here, Jim. Thank you.
Check that. Chris Everett, good to have you on the show.
You know what? You know, you've been calling me that for about the last 5 years.
About 2 years, actually, Chris.
Well, hey, you know what? Let me say one thing. In that game, how many sacks did I have that we came back and won?
How many sacks did you
have? Yeah, how many sacks?
Well, see, but this was back in 1989.
Okay, that was
so
about six.
You may have even been Jim Everett back there, but somewhere along the way, Jim, you ceased being Jim and you became Chris.
Well, let me tell you a little secret. That you know, we're sitting here right now, and if you guys want to take a station break, you can. But if you call me Chris Everett to my face one more time...
I already did it
twice.
You
call one more time, we better take a station break.
Well, it's a five-minute segment, or five-segment show. We got a long way to go.
Well, we do.
We got a long way to go.
We do.
I'll get a couple segments out
of
you before.
It's good to be here with you, though.
Well, it's good to see you, too.
Because you've been talking like this behind my back for a long time.
But now I said it right here.
Right, exactly.
Well, we got no problem with that.
I think that you probably won't say it again.
I bet I do.
Okay.
Chris.
It still, after all these years, does not feel real to me.
And I don't blame Jim Everett for one bit. Do you?
Oh, man. Yeah, no, not one bit.
I'm supposing at that time he did not love that guy.
Wow.
Chris Everett, do not love that guy.
I bet I do.
What is up?
Voice changed a little bit, too, over the years, huh?
Yeah. How about that, huh?
He's become like Pacino, where his voice has just gotten gravelier as the years has gone on.
Wow.
I had no idea that was the anniversary today.
Yeah. How about that? 27 years?
27 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
Oh, boy.
Today is this is the segment of the show where we realize how stinking old we are. all right, back to the blast.
Yes.
Tori Lavello, comments from Ken Kendrick yesterday.
If I were making a prediction, and I sometimes do and try not to make too many, because the more predictions you make, the more likely you're going to be wrong on occasion. But I would predict he'll be right back where he is in that dugout running the team next year.
That was on with Burns and Gambo yesterday when talking about the future. Also was asked about, hey, when can a decision be made on Tori Lavello's future?
The specifics of a decision, when and in what detail, really is the way that we have tried to operate our team for a number of years, and I have learned over the years about my job, what it is, and now, you know, more important, what it isn't. That's principally Mike Hazen's job and his timetable and his thinking and his game plan. I'll learn it, you know, when it's developed, and certainly I have a right to sign off on whatever plan, but, you know, we have a lot of faith in Mike. Tori reports to him, and he'll be the lead decision maker on the details of what we do.
It's all very curious, I guess, if you're able to glaze over the fact that, and I'm not able to glaze over this, again, because I listen to the words of you know, the people in the Diamondbacks organization and how glowing their comments are on Tori Lavello. So I can't just say a 60-game last place finish was all that damning to his chances of coming back. Do I feel like Tori Lavello should be a lame duck manager right now? I don't feel that
way. Yeah, neither do I. And I just don't know why they're putting him through this if they really love him as much as they say they do, because it's okay now. We're one series into the baseball season. But what if Taylor Widener, all right, did not win Sunday's game? What if they came back from their first road trip 0-4? People would already be complaining about that team.
Well, they'd have three more in Colorado, which is not an easy place to play. They're not even, they got to play there now.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. But their first
San
weekend.
Diego, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Look, I told you off the air. I had the feeling after the first three games is like you were just kind of hoping with everything that is stacked against this team right now that those first. You know, the first weekend in San Diego would give you a glimmer of hope. And after Saturday night, you're like, there's not even going to be a glimmer of hope.
The reaction from the baseball team after opening day when they were like, "Ooh, thank goodness we don't stink." That was basically what seemed to be coming off of the Diamondbacks after the first game. Like, wow, we gave them a scare. At least we gave them a scare. We didn't roll over. Uh-huh. I'm like, wow, these expectations are low, low, low. It's because the roster is not that talented, and how is that the manager's fault? And so I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking here in this situation. It has to bother Tori more than he lets on, because Tori's a smart guy and Tori knows how baseball fans operate. And the minute Tori makes a bad decision, and he'll make a few this year, they all do.
Yes.
It's going to spark that kind of conversation.
Look, it's hard. Obviously, again, it's hard to compare what people do for a living to anybody that really works in professional sports for a team. But one thing that is common, if you are on a contract basis at your employment, you're grasping for any shred of security you can get.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how much money you make. I don't care what you do. That's the goal. People want security. It's kind of important to people.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's any different for Tori Lavello.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. I really don't. And I think that you look across Major League Baseball, there's some managers that I really like that I think a lot of, and there's some that I'm not so much on. I think Torrey is very good at what he does.
It's like what would a different manager be doing right now that would make this team any better?
Again, yeah, it's a point I brought up earlier. I don't think there's a manager on planet Earth right now that could make this a playoff contender. And I don't
agree.
I don't think it's the worst roster in Major League Baseball either. It just needed some tweaks, and they didn't do much to tweak it.
Yeah,
but you can complain about certain Torrey things about, like, you know, not pinch hitting for this guy in this situation, or leaving the pitcher in too long or not long enough, kind of things. Those are the kind of things to me that a manager has impact game to game. But overall, when you're dealing with the combination of a lesser roster than the better teams in the West and an injured roster.
Yeah.
It's hard to that's why I don't know how they're going to determine anything from this season anyway.
Okay, I would hope this. Well, exactly. Exactly.
Either he's your guy or he's not your guy, because this season's probably not going to be good.
Right.
And then, it's not going to be his fault.
And then how are you going to look rewarding a manager who just went 60 and 102? You know, it's really a weird situation they've put this man in. And what's even weirder is they all claim to love him. I've never seen anything like this. It's really, really odd.
Not to say that there weren't bright spots in the first weekend. Ketel Marte looks like he's on a mission.
Yeah, he does.
Taylor Widener's start, you mentioned, he was fantastic. To see Geraldo Perdomo come up this early, mm-hmm. Yes, it's somewhat out of necessity with Ahmed down and Rojas getting off to a rough start, but I think for struggling teams, that's what the fan base wants to see is, all right, who are these guys we're going to be rooting for 5 years from now? Mm-hmm. And if they're that highly touted, let's see them now. So that's exciting, too.
Yeah. And so, you know what? I think most fans have their expectations in line with what the reality of the situation is. This really does look like a bridge year where eventually they're going to lean on homegrown talent, because I really believe at some point in time, last year, because if you're Mike Hazen, you don't go about acquiring the pieces you did to pull the plug halfway through year one. That has to come from above. And so to me, I think what it is, it was a philosophical shift the minute when Ken Kendrick and the Diamondbacks front office realized, wow, we just spent all that money on Madison Bumgarner. We're going to get, this is what we're getting. And I think that has spurred a sea change, a change in belief that we need to do this differently.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. But I just, I don't like the way, managers wear the losses on bad baseball teams. I would hope that this baseball team realizes a couple of things. Number one, that Torrey didn't do himself any favors by taking loads and loads of blame. I mean, extraordinary amounts of blame for last year, to the point where he was like putting blame in the heads of his critics. And I would hope that his players appreciate that, because he really did fall on that proverbial sword for him.
Yeah, that would make me want to play harder for the guy,
I would think. And here's the other thing, too. It's you brought this up earlier, and I think this is interesting. The idea of one of the, you know, the old school, hard ass kind of coach, get somebody in who'll throw a table, who won't put up with this stuff. If you've got a fundamentally decent man like Tori Lavello, and he is, you can tell the way he speaks to the media, he shows respect to everybody, okay? Fundamentally decent man. If you have a clubhouse full of baseball players who can't respect somebody like that, then you got the wrong kind of players. You don't have the wrong kind of manager, you got the wrong kind of players.
Yeah, and the same style that was a plus back in 2017 when the Diamondbacks were going to the playoffs and had an exciting year. That style hasn't changed.
No.
Players have.
Mm-hmm. Truth.
Yeah,
facts.
So Diamondbacks today, they start their series in Colorado against the Rockies. 5:40 first pitch. You can hear it beginning with pregame coverage at 5 o'clock on ESPN 620 AM. Starting next Monday, we're giving you the chance all week to win a $500 signing bonus. Text the word bonus to 620-620 to register and listen for your name at 7:35 AM, 1:35 PM, or 3:35 p.m. for your chance at the Arizona Sports signing bonus. Once again, that's bonus, B-O-N-U-S, to 620-620. All right. As the guy who's in charge of updating the mock draft tracker on ArizonaSports.com, last week was busy. It was busy. You got a big trade going on in the top three of the draft, so that changes everybody's focus and everybody's predictions. So it was a busy week. It's continuing this week. Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network. And he's one of those guys that when he puts out a mock draft, people pay attention to it. He's well dialed in, comes from a scouting background. This mock draft on NFL.com released today is a pretty interesting one for a number of reasons. Now, with the Jets unloading Sam Darnold, I think any mystery and anybody that said, well, the draft starts at two now, I think that's over. I think Zach Wilson is getting fitted for a green jersey right now.
He's going to win the Masters?
Jersey.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. No jacket. Sorry.
I know you got golf on the mind.
Kind of.
I'll appease you later on in the week.
All right.
We'll take care of your golf itch, Bick.
Okay.
So does the draft start at three with San Francisco, a team that moved up big time, gave up a lot of capital to get to number three? The feeling at the time was quarterbacks going three.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting part: Daniel Jeremiah's got Mac Jones from Alabama going to San Francisco.
Yeah, it's when you look at those three guys who are going to be available to the 49ers, they all might give you something a little differently. I saw it written yesterday that Mac Jones would be perfect for year one. Trey Lance would be perfect for year four years from now. And Justin Fields is probably the best athlete with the most upside out of them all.
Well, he's got another quarterback going four to Atlanta, and that's Trey Lance.
Wow.
The first non-quarterback in Jeremiah's latest mock is Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida, going to Cincinnati at number five. I will say this. If Cincinnati, who's not in the market for a quarterback, was able to get Kyle Pitts at five, they should be thrilled.
There were various reports that the Falcons are very interested in and very willing to move that fourth pick now.
Yeah.
That it looks like it's going to be one, two, three quarterbacks.
Well, and Carolina, I mean, they came out yesterday and said we got Darnold, but that doesn't preclude us from taking a quarterback in the draft either. The Cardinals changed the paradigm, right?
Yeah, they did.
They did.
They really did.
They changed the order of operation for every team in the NFL.
They really did. And it was nothing that innovative that they did. It was just a very deeply held conviction that you don't draft quarterbacks in successive drafts of top 10 picks.
Well,
don't do it.
I think what forced them to do that was a realization. Like, we swung and missed. We swung and missed on a head coach, and to a lesser degree, we swung and missed on a quarterback. So why continue to perpetuate the problem? Why don't you move on? And now everybody's like, yeah, well, that makes perfect sense. For 40 years, it didn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. The one difference between them, though, and some of these other teams is they had the number one pick. Mm-hmm. And it made it a little easier to move on the next year because, okay, we have our top choice of anybody in the draft. We have the number one pick in a year where, a special quarterback's coming in.
But in a year like this, with so many guys getting pushed up to the top of the first round at the quarterback position, not every team thinks the same on these guys.
No.
They might have different preferences.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all a guessing game right now.
The people who cover the 49ers, they have been noting that, generally speaking, they're really playing this closer to the vest than they have with a lot of things in the past. That is to say that the flow of information from the GM and the head coach, it isn't going anywhere below them. So the people who work for the 49ers, who work on the staff, they've been telling some media people, yeah, we are, they're playing this thing really super close to the vest. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're thinking. They don't need to, because they know who's going to be gone at one and two.
Yeah.
So there's really no need to be this covert about it, but apparently they are. I don't know what it means. I really don't.
Again, I feel, and sort of like what Darren told us also, Darren Gant, when we had him on, I think there's teams that were just so thrown off by this Deshaun Watson thing. I think the 49ers and the Panthers were all in, and they were all focused on trying to get Deshaun Watson. And when this came out, like 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
They had to, totally shift, and now they're all, scrambling.
I'm not saying this to make light of a very serious situation that Deshaun Watson is in. In fact, his attorney is having a press conference today about it. Not his attorney, the massage therapist's attorney. But if you're just going to talk from the perspective of an Arizona sports fan, if Deshaun Watson really had earmarked San Francisco and San Francisco was going to push the button on that, and I believe they were, that's a lot of quarterback that didn't come to the NFC West.
Yeah.
Like I said, maybe our luck's changing.
You're right. You're absolutely right about that. Couple of other interesting notes from Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft. The first defensive player not taken until number 10 by Dallas, and that's Kwity Paye, the edge rusher from Michigan. He does not have Penei Sewell of Oregon as the first offensive tackle off the board. He's got him going 9 to Denver, but Rashawn Slater from Northwestern going to pick ahead to Carolina. The first wide receiver off the board, Jamar Chase of LSU, didn't play last year, going number 6 to Miami. Devontae Smith lasting till 11 with the Giants. And at number 16 for the Cardinals, Jalen Waddle, a wide receiver from Alabama.
Wow.
When it's all said and done, like, I don't think that's the biggest need in the draft for the Cardinals. I still would feel probably better with a first-round corner. Somebody who could lock down that position for the next 5 to 8 years.
Yeah, I agree.
But it would be really hard not to be excited if Jalen Waddle ended up in a Cardinal uniform because he is electric.
Yeah, I agree. But that's to me, that almost would seem like, once again, dessert before dinner for the Cardinals.
Yeah.
But you're right. The pressing needs aren't as pressing as they once seemed, given some of the late moves that they made. Primarily the signing of Malcolm Butler.
Now, I will say this, in this particular mock, just one man's opinion, he's got two corners off the board at 12 and 13 to the Eagles and Chargers, Surtain and Horn both off the board. And in this instance, the Cardinals would leave Caleb Farley and Greg Newsome on the board, and they go later on in the first round in this mock.
I'd have mixed feelings about that. I kind of am with you. I think we need some Robert Alford insurance here.
Yeah.
I think I would still go corner, but again, it depends on who's gone, who's still available.
Yeah, very true. Mm-hmm. Coming up next, the Suns played another game down to their opponent last night, but hey, they got another win, and there were plenty of bright spots. We'll get into them next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Yeah, you know, he's a force down there. And he can do it every night. So teams, you know, try to keep a bit smaller matchup on him, you know, more of a pick-and-pop guy, you know, like Wood. And, you know, we have to exploit that mismatch. We were playing through him. And, you know, he wasn't shying away from contact. He was going right through it, getting to the rim. I think he missed a couple ones early, but didn't get too hard on himself. Kept playing through, and, you know, it was a great bounce back within the game.
Devin Booker, according to a panel on ESPN.com, the 8th best player 25 and under in the NBA.
Yeah, okay. And they got some run on ESPN, too. What a weird presentation that is.
Yeah, we didn't get to hear the audio, but somebody just tweeted us and said Kendrick Perkins just went off on that subject on the jump on ESPN.
Oh, really?
So hopefully we'll be able to track that
That's
down.
Good.
Kendrick Perkins is becoming quite the mouthpiece for the Phoenix Suns. Not that I mind it. I like Kendrick Perkins. I think he's a unique analyst. But anyway, that was Devin Booker talking about DeAndre Ayton and his performance last night. And let's start at the beginning, because Book mentioned it, that Ayton missed a couple early. One of the misses might end up on Shaq and a Fool. It might.
Yeah.
He got fed in the first couple minutes of the game, and he was kind of right of the basket. And looked like he had an easy basket. And from about 2 feet, he missed by 3 feet.
I know.
So and I was just like,
dunk the ball.
Oh.
Yeah.
Then another possession.
You were thinking, man, I hope Bick isn't watching this.
I was like, oh, can't wait to talk about this tomorrow.
I hope Luke's in tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then he had he attempted a finger roll, which actually looked like old school, like 70s NBA finger roll, and it just rimmed out. And you're mm-hmm. like, uh-oh, it's going to be one of those nights. And it wasn't. He had a tough first quarter. In the second quarter, he got things going. He hit all four of his shots. He had 10 points. In the third quarter, He was a force.
Mm-hmm.
He was dominating. He had 15 points in the third quarter alone, 27 points for the game. And we kind of touched on it early. He didn't score. He didn't take a shot in the fourth quarter. But again, when Devin Booker is that nuclear hot, are you going to take the ball out of his hands? Probably not. That was one of my bright spots from last night's game. And I think Devin Booker in that soundbite kind of mm-hmm. described it well. He missed a couple early. He didn't get too down on himself, and then he refocused. And it looks like he got, you know, after his first shift of the game, if you will, it looks like he got some instruction and some encouragement from the sideline. And, man, he looked like a different player in quarters two and three.
Yeah, you know, generally when he has two or more blocks, it's a sign of a really good game from DeAndre Ayton. I think that's what he had last night. I like the way he rebounded.
But you know what has been happening, too, and this has been pointed out on Suns Twitter a lot. I'm sorry to cut you off. DeAndre Ayton has been blocking a lot of shots that he's not getting credit for statistically.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Like, people will track them during the game and say, that's four blocks for Ayton, and then they'll go back and look at the stat sheet, and there's one or two on there.
How is that happening?
I don't know. But it's come up more than once. But yeah, last night, officially, mm-hmm. Two blocks in the game. And he was engaged on the glass. He had 13 rebounds in the game. I guess it was 11 was the final number. Sorry, 27 and 11.
But let's say he gets a lot of rebounds that he's not given credit for, if you look back.
Yeah, I counted at least 20.
Yeah, 20 yeah, rebounds, right, four right, blocks. Right,
Unlike right. Emmitt Smith, who in his time with the Cowboys got credit for a lot of rushing yards he didn't get.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
I'll go to my grave believing that.
I do like the way DeAndre Ayton is competing recently. There's obvious moments in games that could be better, but that's nitpicking. The important thing is, once again, playing with force, playing strong around the rim, not being a weak spot, not being somebody that opposing teams are trying to prey upon. For a while, that was happening. Teams are just coming right at him, making him make actions. The new buzzword in sports,
yes.
Basketball actions. I feel good about where DeAndre Ayton is right now. I just really hope that his energy stays where it is, because sometimes it wanes, and now he's going to be going into a hard stretch of basketball, four games a week for the next 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's hope he stays locked in. That's really all I'm asking from that guy.
Here was Monty Williams commenting on his young center's performance.
He's just dominant in the paint. You know, that's the way that he can play. We were trying to go to him tonight. We were intentional about it. Even out of timeouts, we felt like we had some opportunities to exploit his ability to use his physicality in the paint, and he executed. Not only that, he had a few rim runs tonight that freed up guys for threes. And defensively, I thought he was pretty good on the ball. He had a couple fouls that were, you know, physical fouls, but I thought he had a pretty dominant night scoring the ball, and then he rebounded not as well as he normally does, but he still had 11. And he was just really good tonight. I thought his poise was at a high level when he got the ball in the post. He didn't rush. He got to his spots. He was shooting his jump hook. There's a couple times where he faded, where I felt like he could have used his physicality and got closer to the basket. But overall, I thought he was pretty good in the paint.
There was a point in the second half, too, where Eddie Johnson pointed out on the Bally Sports Arizona broadcast,
mm-hmm.
He hadn't remembered DeAndre Ayton posting up as aggressively as he was during that game.
Uh-huh.
So all good signs.
Agreed.
Monty Williams also shared his biggest takeaways from the game, a three-point win over the struggling Rockets.
Well, I mean, the biggest takeaway for me is we got the win. You know, that always builds confidence. I did not like that we gave up 70 points in the second half. You know, I talked to the guys about that. We can be much better than that. Now, they hit some shots. I think they had 17 threes made. The other thing was we put them on the free throw line. They averaged 23 free throws a game, I think, and they had 33 tonight. So they play with the level of desperation that we're going to see from teams. We're not sneaking up on anybody anymore. And, you know, that's a credit to the guys in our locker room. They've put themselves in this position. So we know that we can play much better defensively than we played tonight, but my biggest takeaway is we came out with a win, and that's what you want to do every single night.
Yeah, that has been the bottom line for the Suns. They've been been able to put a lot of Band-Aids on some wounds in games where they don't play their best, but they get by lesser teams. And they get those wins, but it all changes tomorrow night. It gets ramped up to a different level.
Now, one of the things that I liked about last night, and you covered it there with some Monty Williams sound bites, is there was a time when teams went small against DeAndre Ayton, Monty Williams reacted by going small to match the small. What I've seen now is they're pounding the ball to him and say, exploit this matchup. And to me, from a layman's perspective, the one thing that I think he's doing so much better than he used to do is when they do feed him in the post, he takes his time. And it's a marked difference from the way he used to act. He used to be a little skittish. He'd put up the real quick little hook or whatever. Now he's kind of feeling it a little bit. And that's a really good sign. It's like watching Kyler Murray get comfortable in the pocket of a NFL game.
Yeah.
It's a good sign.
Yeah.
So
you don't see the happy feet anymore.
Right.
You see him being patient, going to the secondary reads, definitely.
And as people have pointed out, that after a couple of those misses early in the game, for him to rebound with one of his best games after that start is pretty good.
Oh, I agree. Suns and Jazz tomorrow night. We'll have some special programming on tomorrow to celebrate another big game in downtown Phoenix between the two best teams in the Western Conference when Utah rolls into town for the first time this year. Starting next Monday, we're giving you the chance all week to win a $500 signing bonus. Text the word bonus to 620-620 to register and listen for your name at 7:35 a.m., 1:35 p.m., or 3:35 p.m. for your chance at the Arizona Sports signing bonus. Once again, that's bonus to 620-620. Coming up next, will getting out of New York be the ticket to stardom for Sam Darnold? And the NFL considering another way to dominate the calendar. We'll tell you about all that next. Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta. Hash marks.
I've always been a big believer in his talent. I think the Jets organization let Sam Darnold down. He's always had the worst personnel in the National Football League. He had constant change in, as far as the coaching staff was concerned. So that's a recipe for disaster for any young quarterback. And I'm not trying to absolve Sam Darnold because he could have played better in this situation. But I just think for him and his career moving forward, it's great to be going down to Carolina with Matt Rhule and Joe Brady.
Look what the Jets did with Sam Darnold. The Jets bring in Sam Darnold and started him immediately. Just threw him to the wolves. Just get him out there. And then when things started going badly around him, they left him out there. And then they tanked a season with him on the roster. They gave him no chance to succeed. And with a terrible team, with terrible defense and terrible weapons, what does that do?
Damian Woody, Mike Greenberg, both voices on ESPN.
Yeah.
Of course, Mike Greenberg, a diehard Jets fan. So, you know, he's going to have passionate thoughts about anything going on with the team and sharing them there. I don't follow the Jets day to day, but I can't disagree with what Greeny said there.
No,
he got thrown to the wolves.
He really, really did, and it really is a case study in finding the right organization. That is the one downside of being a high draft pick. You end up going to a franchise that is bottomed out, and there's generally a reason for it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't think Sam Darnold is all that. I really don't. But I do think he'll be better in Carolina.
I heard a pretty damning description of what a lot of personnel people think about Sam Darnold. And the one that was, the synopsis was, he's the same exact player as he was the day he came out of USC. And there was obviously a lot of excitement in a talented and crowded quarterback class in that draft. He was number three overall.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to what he did at USC, showed a lot of athletic ability. Yes, a propensity to turn over the ball, which has not gone away. But the belief is now you get away, and a lot of people around the league, from what I've read too, are just pinning his failures, especially the last 2 years, on having to work with Adam Gase. I mean, how did Adam Gase fool people for that long?
I don't know.
He kept getting jobs,
well,
and now the guy's like toxic.
I know.
That's why people are comparing him to Ryan Tannehill. that he got out of Miami and now he's become one of the like 10 best quarterbacks.
Yeah, because Tannehill worked with Gase in Miami.
Yeah, it's true. And so I think that for the money that he's going to cost, that's pretty reasonable by today's standards. And that was only, what, 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
But that's how much, and it's going to get crazy like this. I read a story, I know you read it too, Albert Breer's column about how the NFL is really going to expand globally at some point in time, and the amount of German football fans is amazing. They have research that says every time they host a football game in the United Kingdom, there's 6,000 people who fly from Germany to attend the game. That's no small number. In terms of,
wow,
yeah, and so they've got, so what I'm trying to say is the revenues are going to keep dramatically escalating, the players' salaries are going to keep dramatically escalating, oh, yeah. And it's guys that are bargains, the guys that you signed today will seem like bargains in no time, is what I'm trying to say. So with all of that in mind, I think that what Carolina is doing here, it's kind of smart. They've got a really good head coach, offensive coordinator, and a quarterback who's not really had a fair shot at anything.
I think Carolina also, you know, and they could say all they want, and I'm not doubting Matt Rhule when he says, I've been a big fan of Sam Darnold since the draft. We had a good conversation, and Sam Darnold was really focused on team culture. Matt Rhule didn't get the job. Adam Gase mm-hmm. did. Matt Rhule's in Carolina now. But my question on the Jets side of things, okay, he's gone. Adam Gase is gone. Robert Saleh is the new head coach. But it's not like the Jets have been a model of consistency before Adam Gase. That mm-hmm. that would kind of give me pause, especially when you trade a Sam Darnold and you don't have any other quarterbacks on your roster. If they go Zach Wilson at number two, don't you have the same fears as a Jets fan?
I would.
Throwing a young, talented quarterback to the Wolves?
Yeah.
I mean, their personnel's a little bit better. Yeah.
A little. I mean, the Jets still really don't have any weapons.
I mean, off the top of your head, no. It's hard to come up with them. I just think some things never change.
The other question I have about this is like, okay, maybe Sam Darnold has some upside and stuff, but is he better than Teddy Bridgewater? Like that's the part
Teddy
of the move I don't get.
Was really disappointing last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Panthers just decided we need to change quarterbacks.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, they did.
And then they just said we're in motion. Now we can't get Watson. We have to do something.
That's I started exactly to make a point, did. And then I lost the train of thought in my head. But in speaking to Darren Gant, you asked him the question about Deshaun Watson. They could say all they want to say about Sam Darnold. This was Plan C for them.
Yeah,
Deshaun Watson was Plan A starting the offseason. Or maybe in reverse order because Matt mm-hmm. Stafford was more readily available when the offseason started. But Stafford and Watson were plans A and B for Carolina.
Yeah.
Darnold is at least C.
I'm still not convinced the 49ers are sitting at number three hoping the Deshaun Watson thing clears.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. They gave up so much.
That's a
for
lot.
Trey Lance.
That's a lot to clear.
They gave up so much for Trey Lance to sit for at least a year, too. That's what's weird to me.
Or Mac Jones.
Or whatever, yeah.
Right.
The other thing I found interesting, a couple of other things I found interesting, from Peter King's column in Football Morning in America yesterday, he points out July 27th could be a holiday of sorts for NFL fans. He writes, the NFL is thinking seriously of a Midnight Madness sort of opening to the training camp season with 28 teams opening on the same date and with some fanfare accompanying it. The new collective bargaining agreement calls for teams to open camp 47 days before their first regular season games, and so 28 of the 32 teams could, and I say could because this is not final yet, open training camp on the same date, on or about Tuesday, July 27th. The midnight part, obviously not going to happen. But we see that in college basketball. It used to be a little bit more prevalent, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You hit that certain date, 12:01, you could start, kick off the season, have your first official practice.
Right.
Do you think that would be a success? Do you think this is a good idea? Do you think fans... I mean, we know NFL fans care about pretty much everything NFL.
Yeah.
Do they care that much about when 28 teams report to training camp.
Listen, you've seen the ratings for the combine. I'll never understand them. Same. They're inexplicable, but it's football. So my answer is yes, it's genius. They're going to prefabricate. They're going to make another prefabricated football holiday
event.
Football event.
Yeah. The first thing with the NFL.
What's the payoff going to be, though? What can you do at midnight? How do you get fans engaged in that?
Maybe they just treat it like they treat, you know, regular Midnight Madness with college. They introduce the new players. You know, they come out, they say a few words. Maybe they
I think I think that's more of a convenient
slam dunk contest.
No, I think it's a more convenient comparison slash name to call it.
Uh-huh.
I don't think fans are going to be allowed at training camps this year to any great degree. Do you?
I mean,
they're talking about full stadiums, but I mean,
I think so. Why do you think not? I think everything is trending that way, and that's still several months away.
Yeah, I guess it is over 3 months away.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to do full stadiums for games, this is only a couple months before that.
We don't know that they'll be able to do that. I mean, there's one professional team in North America right now that's had one game of a full stadium, and that was yesterday.
Yeah.
So we don't know what the effects of that are going to be.
And that team is barely professional.
And it will be their last full stadium of the year, I believe.
Exactly.
I don't think
they even sold out. I don't think they even sold out that game.
No?
I think there was near capacity, but I don't think there was total capacity. But this is definitely going to happen because first they did it with the all these things that are non-events became events. The NFL draft, okay, then this has now become a multiple-day event. Mm-hmm. Then it was NFL Media Day. Remember when the NFL Media Day became its own thing where you could buy tickets to it and stuff?
Yeah.
Again, then, like you said, the Combine. Now, the Combine is a thing you could buy tickets to and watch. None of these things are actually exciting to watch, but because they're NFL and because they're billed as an event, it's very successful.
You're so right. We were at one of the first fan-accessible media days for the Super Bowl when we were in New Jersey.
That's right.
And they packed the hockey arena where the Devils played.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember walking on the event floor, just looking up and thinking, what a bunch of sheep these people are.
So did I.
You're sitting in a hockey arena watching people hundreds of feet away from you talk.
Talking to the media. But I had the same feeling. I went up and I talked to them because I thought what I was going to get was, man, we're ripped off. And everybody I spoke to up there loved it. And I'm like, What do you love?
There's something to be said, and we've kind of experienced this, I think, when the Super Bowls have been in town,
mm-hmm.
is everybody wants to get in on some sort of Super Bowl connection. And kudos to the NFL for recognizing it. They recognize demand. There's no denying that. You can criticize anything you want, but they recognize demand, and they give people what they want.
Yeah, that is true.
Even though it's lame to some.
They certainly do that.
Yeah, here's your headset. Go listen to people talk to players down below.
And people just being in the same building as combatants in the Super Bowl was enough for them.
So if you don't think that would work, the same thing with training camp or whatever this Midnight Madness thing is.
Yeah, I guess.
You could just be in the same building with your favorite team when they first show up for the first time. Done. Print the money now.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I guess for some people that might be kind of cool. I don't care. Wake me up when the season starts. Coming up next, the NCAA tournament ended on a disappointing note, literally. Is it time to switch out a March Madness staple? I can imagine some people are going to be mad about this when we cover it in social studies next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.